We're discussing the downtown fire, and you had gone to get a load of bricks, and the fire had just started, but when you came back...
Well, the fire was going good. I both took my movie camera down, and we had a movie for that fire. The fire traveled through the basement of the stores, and they couldn't reach it, couldn't get to it. And so it did burn those three buildings out of there.
Were there a lot of people down there watching them?
Oh, of course. That was a good pastime, you know, in those days.
Mm-hmm. What was their reaction to the people watching? Do you remember?
Oh, they got too close to fire and they turned the hose over that direction.
Oh, really? What time of year was this?
It must have been in the spring. I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
Must have been in the spring. I was hauling bricks.
How were they fighting the fire? Do you recall how? Was it all with trucks and?
It had gotten to the place that they had to just stand outside and turn the water into it. They were on top of the buildings next to it, squirting, for turning the hoses down into the fire.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't doing too much good with it, it seemed like.
How long did this go on? How long did people stay and watch?
Well, of course, you get tired of standing around watching something like that, but people would go and come. But that fire burned all day and into the night. Next morning, it was a sad picture there. The cornice on the building was hanging down, but the roof was gone.
So three businesses were completely gone?
Yeah.
And then was there damage to those surrounding buildings as well?
No, there was firewalls in there. They had vacated the building next to the fire, but the firewall had stopped it. It didn't hurt the building. But
what did you do when you retired?
Well, we took a trip. We were gone for 5 weeks. And we had already been in the western states and had traveled all over the rest of the United States. And we've gone 5 weeks.
That sounds nice. Go ahead.
You know, you travel most of that time. You see the country, but you don't see what's there.
Mm-hmm. And you also had quite a hobby here at home that kept you busy over the years. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, I kind of had... When I sold the store, I bought an old house in Cole that they were going to give it to the firemen to burn down. And I bought it, restored it. When I got through with that one, I bought a lot in Union, and I built a brand new house over there. Borrowed a backhoe and to dig the crawl space, and from there on up, and I did it all. I had my grandson helping me the first summer. I got it framed. Then I worked alone on it from then on. My son-in-law was an electrician, and he wanted to wire it, so he wired it. And I got all my kids together to put the trusses up on it. And I did most of it alone. From there, I helped my brother-in-law. We remodeled his house. And I've forgotten how many houses I've worked on since. And in the meantime, when I still had the store, I got started into old cars. So I do that. I'm still doing that.
Tell me more about the old cars.
Well, you bring them in on the back of a pickup. And
these are treasures you found in junkyards all around the area?
Well, I don't think the junkyard had some of them. It's the first one was Model T that I got it when I was in the store and I traded stove for it. And the second one I found out here in the barnyard. It was all in pieces. And the third one, which was the third one, I guess from the Model A, I got it down in Portland. All these home on the trail. And this, what you know is that Dodge that I got out in the country. That should have gone to the garbage. I mean, it looked that bad, but it doesn't look that way now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the shape. And the last one I restored, I brought home in pieces on the back of my pickup. And it was packed in there so tight that I had about a car and a half on there.
Mm-hmm. So then what do you do with all of these parts and pieces when you bring them home?
Well, they get scattered. You went through my garage the other day and saw what a mess it was. Well, I've gotten a lot of it together since you were here, and it's not quite so messy. There's a few empty spaces out there on this table. My Model A, when I was working on it, I thought, man, when I get through with this, I'm going to clean this place up. When I got through with it, I had it all cleaned up. I put all that mess back on the car.
So you've been rebuilding these cars for years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about the process of what you go through?
Well, I take them all apart. Body off of them. And everything off the frame, and you get it down into pieces. And then you clean all that up and paint it, and you start and put it back together.
Did these come with inside parts, the engines and things like that, or did you have to start new from with those?
No, you've got all your metal parts, and all your important parts are there, or I wouldn't buy it. You know, trying to find all the little pieces. If you're in the Fords, whatever you could get parts for, but these other cars are a different story. They're hard to find parts for.
Mm-hmm.
But you scrounge around and you find them.
How did you get interested in this hobby?
Well, the parade came down Adams Avenue one day, and it had two Model T's in it. And I thought, man, I'd like to have one of those. And then I decided to see if I didn't want to buy a new one, you know. So I started thinking about restoring one. That's what got me started. It was that parade.
So did you have some kind of, you must have been mechanically inclined to take on a project like that.
I had never done any of that kind of work before.
Really?
You just start in and do it.
Did you have a book or any kind of instruction?
No,
you just jumped
no.
in and
I just started in.
Put it together?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. One of those things, you know, you just start in. Anything you do, a lot of it, you don't know what you're doing, and you just start in. And by the time you get all done, you know how to do it, and it's too late then.
So your love for rebuilding cars has really continued. How many do you have in your garage now?
Seven.
And what do you do with those?
I build a bigger garage.
Have you been in some of your own parades, though, since that time when you were first inspired?
Well, you can only drive one parade, or one car, you know. We did take two cars to Joseph one time, and Ethel drove one up.
Mm-hmm. So do you do that frequently now? Do you go into a lot of parades?
We go into some parades. We belong to the Rest of Wheels Car Club, and we go on tours.
Mm-hmm.
We take overnight tours and sometimes 2-day tours, mm-hmm. 2 nights.
How do you think the people in town feel about your collection? Are they always excited to see you out in the parades and see what you've done?
Well, you know, I think people used to enjoy these old cars to see them. But we're out and about so much, it's kind of old hat to them. That's my feeling on it. I don't know whether they get too excited about them or not.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're quite beautiful, I can say.
My Model T broke my arm.
Did it?
Cranking it. But that's typical of a Model T. I put a starter on it after that.
So it hasn't all been fun putting all of them together?
Oh, yeah. It worked, a lot of it. But that's what you get them for, to have something to do.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of the case, that's what kind of what got me started too, was I'd sit and watch television in the evening and my back got to bother me. I told Ethel, I've got to get out of this chair. I can't sit here. And so that's when I got the Model T.
We're just sort of going back now and I'm talking about some of the downtown businesses. And you were talking about Liberty Theater. Can you tell me something about that?
Well, it had a balcony. And it was kind of, when you got up to the top seat in the balcony, you were really up there. But it had a chandelier in it that must have been about 20 feet across. But maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit. This is just from memory.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to the man that used to own the building, and he said that chandelier was still in the building, so it could still be there, I don't know. And then it had an organ in it, and there was a merchant here in town that used to play that organ once in a while. He could really play it. And then they built the Granada where they closed up the Third Theater.
Did you like to go to these theaters?
Well, we always got to go to the Saturday afternoon show. And it cost a whole nickel.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking later to one of the guys that run the theater, and he ran it for years. And he didn't remember the nickel shows. But when I was a kid, we got to go to Granada on Saturday afternoons for a nickel. And all the kids in town would go to the show.
Did they have refreshments?
Well, there was a... Outside the theater was a caramel corn shop. And they sold candy and you could buy that as you went into the theater. But inside, of course, they didn't have stuff like that inside then.
Mm-hmm.
But this was on the front end of the Granada Theater there on the west end of it.
Do you remember what it tastes like?
No. I wasn't very old when they did that.
You had mentioned too some of the other buildings, the Zuber Hall and some other dance places. And
well, we had Zuber's 2 dance halls. The Eagles were quite dancers. They still dance, I think, at the hall, but that hall was next to the Elks Lodge, and a big old hall there, and it was wooden structure. And then there was the Zuber Dance Hall, and that was quite a gathering place.
Were you a dancer?
No, I don't dance. I've got 2 left feet. But on that block where the city hall, where the city parking lot is now, there on Washington, used to set the Odd Fellows Hall, and the Observer Press used to set in the basement of that. And when they built the new Observer Building and they moved that press across the street into the Observer Building, put it in the basement over there. And it still made just as much noise. And then behind the Oddfellows Hall there in the parking lot, substation for the power company. And then on the other corner, there's a Richfield gas station. And there was a house set there with that, in relation to that gas station, and it was all brick.
You were also telling me about a house that was moved, or a, not a house, a business that was moved out to the middle of the street?
Oh, well, before my time, Bonenkamp's Hardware had a little wooden building on the corner there where the building, the four-story building sits now. And they had a hardware store in it, and they wanted to continue operating the store. They wanted to build a new building there, and they moved the store, this building right out into the middle of the street there on Elm, and went on doing business in the building while they built the new brick building. And they only built that brick building three stories high, and later, before my recollections got me, but I think they had a fire in that new building, and they tore it down to the second story and built two more stories on it, so now it's a four-story building.
And that's the old Bonenkamp building?
That's the old Bonenkamp building, yeah. So now, there's been so much news on the paper about the Bonenkamp building, and this isn't where NK West building's going up. It's over there where the Radio Shack is now. Good things are seen there. Stoplight was in there. CME True Value Hardware was in there. But it's a four-story building there, and it's got four stories in the basement and the balcony in it, so there's six levels.
Oh. So you have a lot of memories of Union County. You've been here almost your whole life. So I just wonder, how has it impacted you growing up and living in a community such as this?
Well, you feel at home here. I mean, you know, a lot of people will want to get out of town and they leave town, and when they retire, they'll come back. I've always said there's no place like home. And to me, I like it here. You know, it's just home. I'm familiar with everything, and you go to a different town and you don't know what's going on or where things are. The only thing I can say about Portland, it's nice to get out of there.
So is it the people, the sense of community?
Well,
is it a combination
of course, since
that and tradition?
Since I've retired, you know, a lot of the people I knew are gone. And I go downtown now and I don't know anybody because they're all so young. 50 years makes a lot of difference with who you know.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you wished you would have accomplished here in Union County?
No, not necessarily. I just kind of go with the flow, you know. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it's just home.
Do you feel like, in our process of interviewing here today, do you feel like we've missed something that you just really want to share about Union County?
Well, I had something written down here that I didn't talk about moving houses either, but out on Spruce Street, right next to the river, people by the name of Youngs used to have an ice pond out there. and run river water into it, and then in the wintertime when it would freeze, they would cut ice off from it. And they put it in a packet and sawdust, and they had a ice house and put a packet and sawdust. Then all summer they would sell ice. The interesting thing I found out about this, I was talking to one of the youngs in the store one day, and he was telling me they cut this ice with horses, and the ice would be as much as 14, 16 inches deep. It doesn't get that cold here anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's how cold it used to get here in this town.
What do you mean they cut the ice with horses?
Well, they had an ice, I don't know what to call it, it might have been a knife, that they drug through the ice with horses, a team of horses, and pull it through the ice, and it would cut it. And cut it in blocks where they could handle it. And they would put it in the ice house and keep it all summer.
And it would last all summer in those houses?
Yeah.
And you say they packed it in sawdust?
Yes. Put it in there and covered it with sawdust and insulated it, you know, in a form of ice where they take it out and take the hose to it and wash the sawdust off. And put it in the ice wagon, and away they go. But he was telling me that the kids, when the ice wagon come around, where the kids all come, want a chunk of ice to suck on. And he said, I think he told me they used about 100 pounds of ice a day with the kids.
Really? And he would just cut it off in a sliver for them?
Cut off a little chunk and give it to the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then another thing that was interesting, I think, was how they used to move houses. And they'd go to move a house, and it'd probably take a week or 2 weeks to move it from one spot to another, wherever, depending on how far they were going. Because they didn't jack them up and put them on wheels like they do today. They jacked them up and used rollers. Put them on rollers, and as these rolled along, they had to have guys to. The roller would roll out the back end of where they were coming, and then they'd take the roller and put it back on the front and start it over again.
So what would the roller consist of?
Well, I think they were made of a hardwood of some kind. And
did it resemble a log then?
Yeah, they were probably 8-10 inches across.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they. And it's been a long time since I saw one. They might have been a little bit bigger than that, but they were round, and they were probably 4 feet long. And they had a handle on, a round handle on the end of them, so they could grab a hold of them to move them. And they didn't pull them with a truck, because they didn't have a truck big enough to pull them in those days. And they used what they called a turnstile with a team of horses. And they'd hook the horses up to this turnstile, and they'd go round and round and round all day long, and it would wind a cable up on it, which was pulling the house along.
Oh, I see.
And one of the interesting things with that, on H Street Hill, they brought a two-story house down that hill with those turnstiles with horses.
Wow. That must have been something to see.
Well, I saw the turnstile at the top of the hill, and I saw the turnstile at the bottom of the hill, but I didn't see them bring it down the hill because I was in school at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But the house that's at the bottom of H Street Hill on the west side, it's a two-story house. It's a square house.
Were people moving their homes a lot?
Well, the whole thing was, you know, there was a lot of houses. LeGrand was growing, and there was a lot of houses on Adams Avenue that they moved off from there. And there was, that was one of them. And then there's one at the end of 11th Street. Go down 11th Street. There's a two-story house down there that was sitting on Adams. And I don't know, there's quite a few. This one house, they didn't have any place to take it, and they took it up 4th Street and set it on an empty lot up there, and the house sat there, I don't know, for 2 or 3 years, and they decided to, somebody bought it and moved it down there at the bottom of 8th Street Hill. And they used two turnstiles on that, and they had one at the bottom to pull the thing over the hill, and one at the top to stop it from rolling.
Wow.
And they wind up the one and then wind the other one.
How many horses would it require on each turnstile?
Two horses on each.
Two on each?
Yeah, that's what they use.
Were these big work horses?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like they have quite a few work horses, you know, big horses around at that time. Now they're all saddle horses, but they had these big horses that they worked with.
That's amazing.
Yeah, when they built the, dug the basement up there at the college, they would had what they called a fresno, but they would pull the dirt and they'd come up and pull it to kind of up and over a bridge, and so they could dump it into a wagon. And they had a wagon sitting there, and it was made of planks. They would dump that dirt in, so then when they got ready, got it full, why they'd take it where they wanted to dump it, and they'd just take the boards off the wagon and the dirt would fall out.
Wow. It's an interesting way to do it.
Yes, it went well. It really worked. The only thing, though, you know, in those days, it just slower, because with horses, well, you couldn't do so much with them, it's so fast, but they got by.
Mm-hmm.
That comes back to their cemetery up there at the college. I'm going in circles.
That's
now.
Fine. What can you tell me about the cemetery?
Well, they moved that cemetery when they built the college. And there were a lot of Chinese, I don't know, there was quite a few Chinese in there. And they dug them all up, and the story I remember is they shipped them back to China. We used to have quite a Chinatown here in town. Now that's something I didn't write down either.
Mm-hmm.
But we used to have quite a Chinatown here in town, and there were quite a few Chinese buried up there, and they shipped those back to China. Dug them up and shipped them to China. The story I heard, or that I remember, I should say.
What were you told about Chinatown?
Well, I remember Chinatown. It was a bunch of shanties down along 4th Street, down there where they're building the new library and all that. That had shanties in there, and the next block down towards the railroad track was shanties. And when I was carrying papers, that block was still there. I had a customer in there, an African-American customer in there. She was a real nice gal.
Was Chinatown enclosed at all with the fence, or was
no,
it just kind of open?
No, it was just old shanties along there. Mm-hmm.
Did they have any of their own businesses?
I don't think so. I don't think there was any businesses there. It was all where they were living.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, as the Chinese left, well, the colored people took over. And I don't know when they tore down that last block, but the first block, they tore it down and built the Grand Hotel in there. And it was a three or four, I don't know, I don't remember now how many stories it had, but several stories. And
what was it like going into Chinatown?
Just walking down 4th Street.
Yeah.
It wasn't any different from any place else. It was just kind of like going to, well, I shouldn't say that. But some of these slums, some type buildings, you know. Of course, you know, my memory too, through 80 years might have dulled.
What was the relationship like between the people?
I really don't know. The only thing I remember about the Chinese was they were gardeners, and they had a lot of produce. Now, where they raised them, I don't know. But the Chinese did raise a lot of produce, and it used to be, you know, the stores would buy all this produce from around here. They didn't ship all this stuff from California and all, and so they raised locally a lot of it.
And then the second set of buildings was tore down before the hotel went up?
No, they tore that one block down. That's when they built the hotel. They built that, and then they tore it down and built a Safeway store. And then they tore that one down and built a bigger Safeway store, and then there was a church there on that back corner. They built a church there in the meantime while they Safeway bought that church and tore it down and enlarged the store they had at the time they moved out.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, in that all, they tore all that down. So there's been a lot of buildings on that block in my lifetime.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of the businesses have changed.
Well, your business has all changed. Another thing that used to be, whenever a store would change, a new store would move in.
Can you repeat that?
Oh, when they used to be, when a store would move into a new location, well, they'd always tear off the old front and put on a new front. But they don't do that anymore. What kind of storefront that reminds me? There used to be two shoeshine parlors downtown. And they had the storefronts fixed so that in the summertime, instead of opening the door, they would lift the whole storefront.
Really?
So that the whole parlor was open to the street. Today the mailmen all have it easy, only they don't realize it.
Why is that?
Well, they all ride around in cars. And when I first saw them doing this, I thought, gee, that's ridiculous to buy cars for the mailmen. My dad used to carry mail, and then all the mail carriers carried on foot. And they would have drop boxes for them. There'd be one drop box on each route so that they would take mail out and put in these drop boxes for them, so they only had to carry half of it. And I got to thinking about how much garbage that the mailmen deliver today, and they couldn't begin to carry it on foot.
Sure. Do you remember your dad telling you anything else about how the mail business was then?
No. He died young, and he wasn't feeling too good, and we had gotten a car by that time, and my mother would take him around the route, and us kids would ride the running board. How many people know what a running board is? So we'd ride the running board and run the mail into the house for him. We've done that several times. But he knew everybody on the route, of course, like the mailman used to know. He used to carry the downtown route, and then he did have an outside route too. But he'd once in a while he'd take me on the mail route with him. He'd get his mail bag empty while he'd put me in the mail bag and carry me back to office. And they carried big old heavy mail bags. They were leather bags and heavy. And to me, that's enough to carry without the mail.
Must have been in pretty good shape to be able to do that.
Yeah, so things have changed a lot and everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you've enjoyed your time in Union County.
Oh, I like Union County.
You've worked hard and...
Yeah, I've worked.
Had a couple of successful businesses.
Yeah.
We're going to go back just a little bit again and talk about the Morgan Lake power plant. Could you tell me your experience with that power plant?
Well, my uncle ran the Morgan Lake power plant, and I spent quite a bit of time up there. They lived in the house at the plant, and I'd go up there and play with my cousin, and we would be in the plant. Of course, when it was running, it was real noisy. But if he was what they call floating, they were running the plant with water, but they weren't charging electricity, so it didn't take as much water. My cousin and I would put on our swimming suits and play in the flume where the water came out of the plant. It was run by water. And there was a big wooden pipe, and I think part of that pipe is still there, I don't know. From Morgan Lake. Morgan Lake was built for the purpose of running this plant. Mm-hmm. And he was on call up there 24 hours a day, all year long. He did get 2 weeks vacation, and the rest of the time he had to stay there.
Wow.
Which you don't see happen today. The mm-hmm. union won't let that go on.
Mm-hmm.
But he spent all of his time up at that plant.
So how safe was that to swim in the water right next to the power plant?
Well, it was the water coming out of the flume. See, it was the water wheel in there. If the water run this, would turn the generators. And if they weren't wet. When it was running, when it was generating, while it was running out a lot of water out there, you wouldn't want to be in there. But when he was just what they call floating, he was running just enough water to keep the wheel turning, rather than have to start it up again when he wanted to start charging electricity again.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd go in and play in the flume.
So that was actually inside? The power plant.
No, the flume was outside the building.
Oh, the flume was
and
outside.
And it had a chute that came out of out the side of the building from the water wheel and then out into the crypt. The crypt still runs down through there.
Was this clean water?
Well, as clean as Morgan Lake always was. Yeah, it was direct from Morgan Lake. And Morgan Lake, my uncle had built, I don't know whether he helped build both dams, but he helped build one or two of them. He and another man built one of those dams on Morgan Lake to raise the lake. But that lake has no water coming into it after the spring runoff. Mm-hmm. They catch all the spring snow water that melts up there above the lake, and it runs into the lake, and that's all that runs in there all summer long. So when they were running the lake, or the power plant, the water would get low in Morgan Lake. It doesn't do that anymore because it's just evaporation, all the water that goes out of the lake.
Mm-hmm. How long did your uncle do that?
Well, golly, I don't know. Most of his life.
Mm-hmm. What was his name?
England, Howard England. But that's quite a prison to put a man into, to keep him there all except 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
They would let him go down to the doctor, or when they had water problems some at the house, so they would let him go down and get water to haul back up for drinking water at the house. That's all he got to leave up there. He was on call 24 hours a day. Something happened on the power line somewhere, he would have to get on the line and run the plant.
Did he enjoy that work, do you think?
Well, I don't know. He enjoyed life. He enjoyed life.
So he was doing that when you were just a small...
Oh, he started that before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
then he, let's see, I don't know, I was probably, maybe after I got married before he left there.
And then did he retire from that, or did they change the
operation?
Well,
they made the plant automatic, and that's when he got out of there. Mm-hmm. And they started building these big plants. And they built Bonneville after he was doing that. And they built these bigger plants to make more electricity. And so it's just kind of like everything else. The big gets bigger and the small gets smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And so they closed that plant up eventually and tore it down. But there's that plant and the one at Rock Creek and one at over at Granite, there's a plant there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one at Cove. I think that's one at, they rebuilt a new one over there at Cove. Cove built one, generates electricity and helps pay their expenses.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask a question about that. Was he only responsible for the physical part of the plant, or was there billing involved for the electricity that was being generated? How did that work?
No, he just worked for the power company. It was Eastern Oregon Light and Power.
Mm-hmm.
Was the name of it at that time. And no, he just was an employee of the company.
Mm-hmm.
He just ran the plant.
Okay.
Repaired it if it needed repairing, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. So then they had a local office in town.
Oh, yeah.
For all of the billing and services.
Yeah. That substation downtown I was telling you about, that was Eastern Oregon Light and Power Company substation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there anything else about the power plant you can think of that stands out in your mind?
No. No. I can't think of any more.
Okay.